When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It is October, and this time we are doing anthologies all month. For the first time since episode 19 was the last time we talked about an anthology film. And to kick off this momentous occasion, we are joined by the one and only Cyborg Joe of the Lethal Weapons. Someone posted one of their music videos on our Facebook page months ago, and they immediately became one of our favorite bands. So Whoa. We are super excited to have Joe join us on this
all right.
episode.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for having me. Stoked to be joining from Tokyo, Japan.
We're kicking this one off. The way that we did this was each one of us picked a different anthology film. So, Scott, you picked this one, Necronomicon, The Book of the Dead.
Oh, yes, I did.
So what drew you to this one, dude?
I mean, it's pretty obvious. Two words, Jeffy Combs.
Who's got a prosthetic chin that makes him look more like they could have just hired Bruce Campbell to play
H.P. Right. I know, but it's so good. I fucking love it. I love this movie. This is like the third time in 18 months that I've watched this. And it's like the best Lovecraft that you're going to probably get.
I feel like it is definitely the one that touches all of the Lovecraft pieces. For lack of a better word. So I'm thinking that the best way to handle this month is we're just going to tackle each story individually and then kind of come back and talk about
the wraparound.
Yeah. So we'll start with the first story is The Drowned.
Yeah, you were right.
The Drowned.
The Drowned.
Listen, it's horror movie, not horror grammar night, all right?
So, I mean, this one isn't my favorite. It's kind of the middle one for me.
What?
I like it. I didn't love it.
wait. Let's preface this with, like, so do you want the information about each one? Because I did my research. Because I
go
love
for it, Scott. Drop us with the HP background.
All right. Now, first of all, we are in no way, shape, or form supporting or condoning H.P. Lovecraft because he was a horrible racist, misogynist piece of shit, but
shit, really?
Oh yeah, he's awful.
Yeah, look into it if you want to enjoy him, but yeah he's not great.
Okay,
all I'll say is if you want to know everything, just search what the name of his cat was. So Scott tell us about what the background story was on this very gooey tentacly tale.
This was directed by Christopher Gans, and he also did Brotherhood of the Wolf in, I want to say, like 2004 or something.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Also, I read on IMDb, somebody was like, this movie is so good because Screaming Mad George was in charge of effects. I also looked on IMDb for his name, and I didn't see it. I know that the immortal Spectral Effects, who did, they do all of Guillermo del Toro's movies. They did, you know, they did Hellboy. They did Pan's Labyrinth. They just did Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. But Spectral Effects did all of the practical effects in this movie, which is all you need to know about how good it looks.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. That's the thing. It's like, I feel like it's a very bad movie with very, very cool effects.
I think that it's a really silly movie because, like, the thing about all of these stories are that they are kind of prototypes for Tales from the Crypt almost, because they all have a twist, right? Now, Cool Air is the one that they used for
The Cold,
which is a pretty straight telling, but it's so cool. We'll talk about it in a minute. But I really feel like pieces of The Rats in the Walls and The Whisperer in the Dark are kind of taken for both The Drowned and Whispers. But for The Rats in the Wall or The Drowned, I think that the things from The Rats in the Wall, it's an underground city where the owners of this mansion had de-evolved humans to eat them for their flesh. They grew them. It's kind of like Midnight Meat Train almost, but instead of them being like vampires that are eating humans, it was more like people that were just cannibals. But The Whisperer in the Dark is this thing where like this alien comes down and is whispering in the dark, and it clothes itself in these basically like prostheses so that it can look like a human. So The Drowned is kind of a mix of those two, and so is Whispers. But The Drowned, I think, is the most obviously Cthulhu mythos of this movie.
Yeah, I assume that was him.
It's definitely the movie that has, of the shorts, it's the one that I think has the most consistent good special effects. Like, I think that each one has good moments and then there's bad moments, but this one is pretty much every special effect works for me. Like, be it the fish monster that just shows up.
That guy is awesome. I called him, what did I call him? The sea mariachi. Because he's got that ridiculous hat.
And then, like, I don't know, everyone's got these glowing eyes and they start vomiting up like these tentacle mouths. Yeah. Oh, it's so gnarly.
It's great. I really, this movie just is such a good time. It feels a lot shorter than it actually is to me.
Oh, I mean, I was checking the time every once in a while, but it's definitely an interesting one. And yeah, the giant tentacle monster that pops up at the end is amazing. Like, that whole effect looks fantastic.
And it's cool to watch this movie and realize that in 1993 they were doing this, because that was kind of an odd time for this style of film, you know, like they just didn't really do creature features at that time that I know of. Most of it was, you know, like supernatural horror, like Warlock, you know?
Yeah.
And that guy looks like the guy who played Warlock. I don't think it's him, but he definitely looks like him.
So Joe and Brian, Scott and I have talked a bit about our feelings on this. How did you guys feel about The Drowned?
I thought it was the most eye-catching, you know. I don't have much to say because I had trouble paying attention to this movie. It was just boring to me other than the special effects.
That's what you're watching it for, is the special effects.
So it was like a guy jumps off, a guy commits suicide. I won in hearts. I started playing Yahtzee. Tentacles come out of a girl's mouth. That was really cool. I finished my game of Yahtzee.
You're such an old man.
Then a monster comes out of the floor and he gets killed with a chandelier. But the thing was, I was so offended when Matt said this was one of the best because I had such trouble paying attention that I thought The Drowned, the first part of this where the guy commits suicide, I thought that was The Drowned. So I was like, that was a terrible one. I didn't realize that the, like, when Cthulhu shows up and all that was the same story, because I just stay on track.
Oh, that's why you're the eye candy of the show, because you're definitely not bringing a whole lot mentally to the table.
I am the eye candy of a podcast.
All right, and Joe, what were your thoughts on this one?
Well, I could only, like, literally watch half of it. I watched it on I watched it on YouTube, and it's got like those black bars on the top and bottom of the screen, and they didn't actually reformat, you know, the frame rate or whatever. So I only like could see like the middle part of the screen the whole time. So I had to like kind of
you lose a lot.
Yeah, that's what I thought, man. Like I'm sitting there imagining what they're looking at, you know. Sometimes I'm like, oh man, I wonder how cool that thing is that they're looking at, because I have no idea.
Yeah, but it's also not available anywhere. You can't watch it on Amazon or Shudder or anything.
Yeah, I searched all those. I couldn't find it except for on Amazon, like a $120 VHS copy of it or something like that. So I was like, all right, I'm going to have to settle
it. And I used to have this on VHS. I might still have it on VHS.
It looks really good. like it looks like a good movie, you know? Like it's like a good 90s. I don't know, man. There's something about the lighting that I really liked. Obviously, like the monster effects and all that. But dude, like, oh my God, there were some great lines throughout the whole movie. But I think my favorite line in The Drowned was when the dude, I forget what his name was, but the guy with the mullet, the blonde mullet, he was looking for the book, and he just goes, he was like looking for it and throwing like cobwebs and like books off the shelf, and all of a sudden he just goes, Jayum! Like in frustration. Jam! I was like, all right.
Oh, found a new shirt design for us.
Yeah. That's it.
Oh, yeah. Because we're always doing so well with these obscure ass deep cut t shirts that I have.
It's either containers. That or another shopping mall idea. Sorry, Matt.
All right. So let's move on to story number two, The Cold, which is still a good story, but probably my least favorite.
I'm sorry. Can I just say, like, the one thing that I did not like? Can I just say the thing I did like and did not like about it? About the Drowned.
Sure.
So I thought that the fact that the dude's name was Jethro and his family died on a fucking shipwreck was just badass. I thought that was like, oh shit, dude. I haven't seen many movies where like a dude's family dies on a shipwreck. Like that's fucking sweet. And then I just kind of lost interest in the whole movie when I was supposed to be rooting for the blonde mullet guy. Like he just seemed like a dick throughout the whole thing. And then I thought,
his wife killed.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. That's so he's looking for forgiveness, but then he gets her back, and she doesn't give a good blowjob anymore. So he wants to fucking kill her.
The thing is that she's like gonna give him a tentacle blowjob, and he's just like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah, I'm good.
Those tentacles are gonna help.
Yeah. If anything, like cup the balls or something, you know. Anyway,
well, now we know why he's on the episode.
Yep, there we go. And now on to The Cold. probably my least favorite of the stories. For starters, the fall that the guy takes down the stairs does not seem deadly enough to just kill him on impact.
Yeah, that was a surprise to me too. Well,
it may not have killed him on impact.
Oh, true.
Killed him when they mutilated his body.
But the doctor said if he wouldn't have fallen on the fall, he would have killed him for what he did.
Yeah.
So I guess from that line, I was like, okay, I guess he did die from a shitty fall.
Here's a fun fact about The Cold. The director didn't speak any English, which kind of explains why every line delivery is so awkwardly done.
Oh, yeah. The best lines were in this one.
Oh, that's Shusuke Kaneko, and he did a shitload of Godzilla movies.
Nice.
Dude, by the way, this was a happy accident. I didn't know that this was like a segmented, like an anthology film.
Mm-hmm.
And just a happy accident that Shusuke Kaneko was one of the directors, because I love this dude. Like, he makes some really fucking cool movies, man. If you guys are interested, I would check out a movie he did called Summer Vacation 1999. It's about this... It's a really cool movie about this... It's kind of like a weird horror fantasy thing about this summer school. These like three or four students are staying there, and it's supposed to be like a boys' school, but all the actors are played by women. And so when I found out that this guy directed one of the movies in this anthology, I was like, oh fuck yes. And then like it was the worst one in my opinion. So I was like, ah, fuck. Ah, he dropped the ball.
Well, no, I mean, I think that the cold is all right.
It's all right.
I really do think it's not that bad. It's like, I think that its strength is actually in that gooey ass
meltdown at the end.
Oh yeah.
Which is, I would argue, the best body melt we've ever discussed on this show, and we've discussed quite a few.
Probably.
And I think it's the guy like still being like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Or like whatever he's saying is he's like melting and it's just someone puppeteering a skull at that point. Oh, but yeah, I'm like, so I love it.
It's the doctor from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2.
Yeah, it's the TGRI guy.
TGRI guy.
He's also in one of my favorite movies, playing a very similar role, My Best Friend's a Vampire, where he plays the vampire hunter.
That guy really, he's like the Tom Cruise of bad movies, you know? Like, he only plays one character.
The doctor, yeah.
So here's the thing. The best way to explain it is that, like, as we've already established, the highlight of this movie is the effects. And this is the one that has the least amount of effects. So it kind of,
but
like,
it's got hurts such in that. A good, like, they blew their load on that body melt.
He also, side note, David Warner is the name of the actor. Appeared in one of the weirdest sci-fi horror films I've ever seen, Time After Time, starring Malcolm McDowell and him. And it's the plot line is that Malcolm McDowell plays H.G. Wells and he builds a real time machine. And David Warren plays Jack the Ripper, who steals the time machine and jumps to 1979. And then H.G. Wells has to track him down and stop him and bring him back to the normal century that he's from so that he can be handled. And it's supposed to explain how we never caught Jack the Ripper was that he was in 1979.
God damn.
How are you saying that's not awesome?
It's also awesome. The name of the movie is where Cyndi Lauper got the idea for her song.
No.
Like, yep, she was watching the movie on television and then wrote the song.
You're basically selling me this film.
Also, Scott, it's David Warren is the owner of the Waxwork in Waxwork.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so he is a multi-talented. He's definitely able to do more than one character.
Is that what the Cyndi Lauper song is about, or is that just what it's called?
I think she just came up with the title while watching the movie. Fuck. I don't think she was like, I'm going to write a story about Jack the Ripper.
Oh, man.
She's a weird lady. I bet that there's a 40% chance that she's... Yeah.
I would get a new respect.
Yeah, if it was anyone else, I would doubt it.
Yeah, true.
Like if it was like, you know, this is where like Madonna's song Time After Time came from, I'd be like, no. But it's like Cyndi Lauper. I'm like,
Cyndi Lauper.
I could see watching a weird horror movie on television and being like, yeah.
I want to write a song about that. I think so. She's from New York.
Absolutely. Have you ever watched? Yeah, it's like, have you ever watched any of her music videos?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've watched like the 10-minute version of Goonies Are Good Enough, where she like has multiple dialogue pieces.
I didn't know that there was a long version of that. I got my day planned out now.
So the reason why it's so long is that they shot two music videos for the same song. So like the first half is her with a bunch of wrestlers like reenacting the early part of the movie, The Goonies, and then they go into the caverns and the music video stops at the end of the song. You're like, tune in next week to find out what happens when Cyndi Lauper and her wrestling friends go into the caverns. And then they just did another music video for the same song that continues the storyline. Wow. So you just listen to the song twice in a row.
That's insane. Man, the 80s were such an incredible time.
Yeah.
So the cold, I mean, I like the premise that like they can live forever so long as they are constantly drinking spinal fluid.
Yeah.
Were they drinking it or injecting it?
Whatever. They're putting it in.
Yeah,
them.
Man. They party
and
with
then
it.
It's got like that basket. Yeah, it's got that basket case 2 type concept where she's been pregnant for like decades.
Dude, I need spinal fluid to feel his baby inside me.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Which is really, really gross.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah, it's a weird one. And they're just staying alive because they need to keep a piece of the doctor alive.
Yeah,
I feel like
internalized misogyny right there.
Well, it's like, I feel like it's one of those, like, if she gives birth to that baby, then she's prepared to die. But until the baby's delivered, she has to stay alive, which is fucking creepy.
I didn't understand how much time had passed between that incident and like when she died and when
I believe it was 20 years.
Was it really?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, I think it was something like 20 years.
Baby... It was supposed to be 20 or 30 years.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Okay. I did not know it was that long.
They say they make a little oblique comment about the he wasn't a detective. He was a journalist.
A journalist,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he makes a little oblique reference at the beginning.
Dude, if it's not Dennis coming out after 20 years, it's not coming out, man.
You don't know, man.
Dude,
you don't know.
Give up, dude.
Dennis Christopher, who you might know from his appearances in the movie Breaking Away, as the killer in Fade to Black, and as Eddie Spaghetti in the 90s It movie.
Whoa!
Eddie Spaghetti!
And also the carrier of favorite line in that segment, which was...
what did he say?
Then how come three more bodies turned up, all with the same M.O., aftermath and melted? Dude, the way that he hits...
Hey, that's just good detective work.
It is, but the way that he hits that aftermath and melted. M.O. aftermath and melted.
Oh.
Beautifully.
He is the detective we all wish we had. And then finally, probably my favorite story, because it actually did unsettle me in a lot of ways, is Whispers.
Yeah,
it's goofy as all hell, but man, there's some creepy shit that happens.
I think that the implications of it are really what make it so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's starring Ernie from Return
Living Dead. Yeah.
Running around. And
his wife is a skunk ape wife from House of 1,000 Corpses.
That's right. Brian, that's for you.
Oh, yay.
That's for you, Brian.
That's the one thing I got from this segment. Because I didn't like this one.
What? You didn't like anything. Shut up.
I'm sorry that everyone else wants to see the people that make General Hospital do a horror short, but it's not my cup of tea.
I just think that...
This is a Brian Yuzna. That's why it's so good.
That's what I like. But, like, yeah, when they just see, like, you know, just the backs of their heads completely removed, and there's nothing there. And then there's that bat, but his voice is like coming out of its stomach,
it
and
needs
the brain
us
is
to reproduce.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh god, it's so horrifying.
They took my mind.
Like, yeah, there's no reason for it to be unsettling. We get that it's goofy, but it's just it's good.
It's me, Paul.
The part that really, really bothers me, and I think it's for two different reasons, right? So it's she's in the hospital bed, and then they're like, look, Paul's in the next bed. And they like throw open the curtain and they just lift up this like lifeless body with no eye holes or anything. And it's a very like Tales from the Crypt moment. But then they throw off the bed sheet and all of her limbs are missing.
Yeah.
And I think that really fucked me up, because I just finished reading Johnny Got His Gun, which is like a really upsetting book. And I was just like, no, more missing limbs. Why?
Dude.
Like, it's fucked up.
I missed all of that. I didn't know she had missing limbs. Fucking YouTube.
That's right, because you couldn't see
God damn it.
Yeah. They cut off all of it. Like, just like that Metallica video, she's got no arms and no legs.
God damn it.
It's gnarly. And then the downside with this is that the stop motion bats flying does not look great.
Oh no, it's like, what is that shitty ass bat? Is it the beginning of is it the beginning of Bordello of Blood or something like that that we talked about, that has like a really shitty bat like flying around at the beginning? I can't remember.
Possibly, maybe, but yeah. It definitely is. A lot of the special effects aged really, really well. Stop motion bat was not among them. Like, stop motion bat looks shitty for 1993, because I've seen Jason the Argonauts and I know what you can do with playmation. Like, but yeah, I really, really like this one. When you picked this, Scott, this was the only one I distinctly remembered. I was like, yeah, the one with the fucking bats that suck out people's brains, I'm in.
The best, I really think that, you know, my favorite effect of this movie is definitely the body melt from the TGRI guy. But the second best is when the cops got the back of his head open. He's just like,
oh, man.
It's super disturbing, because you can, when he turns around and is kind of like shuffling towards his ex-girlfriend, you can see through his eye holes.
Yeah, to the back of the room. Oh, it's
It's really good. This movie has a lot of good in it.
Yeah,
he was moving so way too fast, man. He was moving really fast.
So let's talk about the wraparound story. So we've got
the library.
Yeah, the concept is simple enough. H.P. Lovecraft is showing up at a library to steal the Necronomicon so he can make his books. And then, you know, as is normal, there's a giant monster underneath the library, and all the people that are there are monks that are part of this monster. Simple enough. But there's like a little bit of like shunning that happens. There's definitely a decapitation. Like there's some gnarly gore.
Decapitation is so funny because it's just this is the most Evil Dead 2 that Jeffrey Combs has ever done.
Oh, 100%. Like which is great because he looks like Bruce Campbell the whole time.
Yeah, this is just he's doing Ash Williams.
The only downside with this particular wraparound segment is like for me. Like the anthology film, it's important for like there to be some type of when it cuts back to the wraparound story, like, you know, that story should continue to progress. Not the case in this one. It's literally just like cuts to Jeffrey Combs, like flipping to the next page and just immediately starting the next story.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, well, I guess that's over. Next.
Interesting story. Hey, who was one of the other monks? Was he in, like, Surf Ninjas or Temple of Doom or something?
Let me check.
Not the one with the nose ring, but, like, the assistant monk, like, demon monk librarian.
He didn't even get a credit. If I'm looking on IMDb, it has... What the hell is that... So it says that the one monk, the main monk that had dialogue, got his start in a film role as the police. It says his most memorable role was the police sergeant in Pirates of Penzance, which I don't even remember a police sergeant being in. So that being the most the memorable role is upsetting. And said he also had a cameo as one of the party dancers in the Addams Family as Diggit Adams. Let me see. Diggit Adams. So Diggit Adams, if you Google it, is like literally an extra. Like the only picture they have is a blurry photo where he's standing behind the two-headed women and says, Diggit Adams is a relative of the Adams family. He has four arms and dances with his date, a woman with long blonde braids like Heidi at Uncle Fester's homecoming party.
Matt.
That's Matt. It. Yep.
Oh my God. It's Diggit Adams.
Diggit, whatever.
No! Oh my God, Matt! Jesus Christ. Oh, we're thinking about Lumpy Adams.
Yeah. Listen, it's spelled D-I-G-I-T. That is Diggit if I've ever seen it.
No, it's Diggit! It's Diggit! Oh my God. I could get it if, like, Diggit wasn't a real word. You know what I mean? And Diggit was.
Oh, well, now I want to make a Diggit Adams. I just think that's a great name.
Yeah.
He's just very agreeable about everything.
Hey, Mr. Adams, what do you think? I dig it. Diggit Adams.
All right. So that was the Necronomicon Book of the Dead. Scott loved it. I liked it. It sounded like Cyborg Joe enjoyed the quarter of the movie that he was able to watch, and Brian hated it.
I didn't hate it. I just was like not looking forward to recording because I was like, I have nothing to bring to the table with this.
You're like, I didn't enjoy. It wasn't that it was bad. It was just that Yahtzee was more entertaining.
Yeah, it was boring.
Oh man, I can't wait to record this Patreon episode with you.
Nothing should be 2 hours long. That is that premise, but we'll talk about that when it comes.
Jesus Christ, I got all tied up. Oh, double features. What are your guys' double features with this?
Cyborg Joe, you go first because you are our guest.
All right. Well, I would recommend two films, actually. One was the aforementioned Summer Vacation 1999, also directed by Shusuke Kaneko. But another one is another late 80s, early 90s Japanese horror film with a lot of stop animation and cool decapitations and meltings and stuff called Hiruko the Goblin. I think this is a perfect
movie. I knew what you were going to say. As soon as you said
no fucking way.
Stop motion and head decapitation.
Are you serious?
I was like, yeah.
Such a great movie, man. Yeah. Really one of the most terrifying movies I've ever seen, honestly. When she turns into a spider, like when the head isn't just a head anymore, it's like a spider legs and like it's hunting. Dude, the creepiest thing though is that this freaking spider, this spider-legged, decapitated girl's face is hunting high school kids or junior high school kids and biting their fucking heads off. And she lives in hell. And the school is built over top of a portal to hell. Like this Japanese
Hellmouth from Buffy.
Dude, it's I don't know. Like the whole premise is fucking awesome to me. And like there's a really cool romantic scene of her, just her face, like dipping, like protruding out of a pond or like a body of water, and she's singing like this really weird and hypnotic song, and then like the song stops. And like her legs come out and she goes hunting for these kids. And I'm just like, oh shit, dude, it's on. And like these fucking kids are just getting their heads eaten off by this spider. And like, yeah, like the stop animation, it's really, really dated. But man, I don't know what it is about it, but I love that movie. And I think it would go really brilliantly with this one. That movie also, by the way, directed by the guy who did Iron Man. That's for the Iron Man.
Well, I hate to be that guy.
Okay.
But... the easy answer is In the Mouth of Madness.
Okay.
Okay, so as long as that wasn't for either of you two guys, because if you want it, you're more than welcome to have
no,
it.
No. I thought you were going to take my easy answer, so that's fine.
But here was my backup. Okay, I'll tell you my backup after you and Brian are done.
I'll go real quick, because I think your backup was what I was about to say. I went with another Jeffrey Combs, H.P. Lovecraft, gooey adaptation, which was From Beyond.
Nope, that wasn't what I was going to say, okay. But that would be a really good double feature, I think.
And Brian?
Well,
your double feature
Joe,
was playing a game of Yahtzee, right?
No.
Cyborg Joe said something that got the wheel turning when he said he doesn't see enough films where a family is killed in a shipwreck. So I said, you know what? I'm going to double feature it with a movie, Family Destroyed in a Shipwreck. It's got all the gooey stuff this movie has. Trolls, abominable snowmans. I'm going with 2013's Frozen. It's a good double feature.
Yeah, the Disney film Frozen.
Wow.
Lovely.
Damn, someone died in a shipwreck in that movie? God damn.
So, Scott, how do you feel that Brian stole your backup plan?
Well, I actually thought he was going to because he was saying people dying on a ship and it's gooey. My backup was going to be Deep Rising.
Wow, Brian sounded normal. I sounded like Fozzie Bear for a second.
Wow.
All right. So before we get into the what did we watch this month, let's talk a little bit about the Lethal Weapons. So Cyborg Joe, where did Lethal Weapons come from? Because holy shit, do I love this band.
Oh, sweet. Oh yeah. Thanks, man. the Lethal Weapons, I moved to Japan in 2015 and I moved to this neighborhood. It's got this really cool bookstore. And the owner of the bookstore asked me to be in a music video for his bookstore that he was making. And I was like, yeah, that sounds like a fun time. I'd love to do it. And the guy who wrote the song for his bookstore asked me if he wanted to be in a band because it was a lot of fun making the music video or whatever. And he ended up being like a really fucking like amazing songwriter and everything. So I would go over to his house and play video games on his emulator and watch movies and talk about wrestling and stuff like that. And he's just like, yo, we have to make a band. And I was like, dude, I would love to. If we're going to make music like we did that one day, I would love to do that. And he was like, yeah, we're going to just going to be 80s themed. And it's just going to be this, like talking about, you know, songs about video games and movies and wrestling and and all this stuff. I'm like, dude, this is amazing. So I went over to his house one night and we just kind of like sat around and talked about like how we would dress, you know? And he was like, you need to.
I mean, that's important to figure out early on.
Yeah. But he was like, you need to dress like Marty McFly in Rambo. I was like, all right, I'm sold, dude. I'm in. So we started like throwing around like costume ideas and stuff like that. And he is a Japanese guy who likes American football, which is a totally, like, here in Japan, that's totally a kind of subculture thing. Like, no one watches football here. But he loves it, and he wants to talk about football with me all the time, and I don't really know anything about football. So, yeah, so he just, like, he, you know, he wears a football helmet and, like, overalls, like Doc. So he's like, I want to be like Doc and a football player. I'm like, all right, dude, I don't know what this band's going to be, but it sounds like fun. Yeah, man, like, we're just trying to have fun with it, you know? Like I think Scott said earlier, like, the 80s were an amazing time, and I actually agree with that statement. And I want to keep those good times rolling, you know?
Yeah, man. I know the one that got all of us was Premium Friday Night.
Oh, yeah,
that was
yeah,
the
yeah.
one that people played us. And we were so like, funny. What is this?
Yeah, yeah, man.
So what's the reaction been to it as of late? Because I feel like I've heard a couple people share your stuff. Like, it seems like people are catching on to
it. Dude, I'm actually really interested who shared our stuff in America with you. Because so far, all that I know is, like, our fan base is just purely Japanese and, like, you know, my friends back in Ohio.
Where can people listen to the Lethal Weapons album Back to the 80s? Where can people listen to that record?
You can catch Back to the 80s on pretty much every single digital music format out there. We made videos to all of our songs on the album. You can find those on YouTube. All those things, man. Amazon Play or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, you guys go and download that album.
I think YouTube has a streaming service now.
Yeah, they just added that recently. But yeah, go and start downloading that. And now, what is something that you've, I don't know, listened to, read, whatever, that you highly recommend to everybody? We'll start with you again, Cyborg Joe.
All right. I want to recommend One Cut of the Dead, a Japanese self-made zombie movie, I guess, and also The Naked Director on Netflix. I just get excited when Japanese people get excited about their own stuff. It doesn't happen enough.
All right, sounds good. Scott, how about you?
I watched Rocket Man with Megan, and it was great.
Yeah, I think it's better than Bohemian Rhapsody, personally.
Yeah, well, I mean, they lean pretty hard into the homosexual aspect of Elton John's life, which is much more, I think it's much truer to the film, or to the story, than kind of hetero-washing someone like Freddie Mercury, who, I mean, it's like, I want to see the Judas Priest movie, you know? Like, I want to see the Judas Priest movie, and I want to see Rob Halford, like, fucking dudes. And they're all wearing leather. I don't want to see him, like, being straight. That just, like, why, you know?
Yeah.
But also Taron, what's his name? The guy that plays
Egerson or something like that? Whoever it is, he kills it. Yeah.
Oh, my God. You look at him and you're just like, man. Because as soon as they start to, like, shave his hair back and give him the Elton John, you know, baldingness, man, it's not that he really looks like him. It's just that he carries himself, and it's a very immersive experience, and I loved it. It kind of reminds me of, I mentioned it months ago, but My Weekend with Marilyn, which is Michelle Williams as Marilyn Monroe. And it really, it's that similar thing where it's like just such an immersive performance.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I'm going to not do a movie this time, but a new podcast on the Geekscape Network that I've enjoyed so much that I listened to their first three episodes twice already, and that is 91 Donkey Lane. It is a improv comedy podcast about two dimwitted roommates who live in a haunted apartment and don't realize it.
I listened to the first episode. I thought it was really funny. The Monkey's Ball.
Yeah, Brian, you need to listen to the third episode because it is literally the Cool De La 10th episode just done for 20 minutes instead of 5.
Oh, nice. Oh, man. You know, aside from watching Survivor, me and Jade have been really into Survivor. We've burned through like 3 seasons already. I don't know, man. There's 3 that I kind of want to talk about. What should I talk about? I think I'm going to go with Hail Satan. I really enjoyed Hail Satan. It's a great documentary. It
is about the Satanic Temple, which by watching the documentary, I think I learned they didn't come out and say it, but it seems like the Satanic Church and the Satanic Temple are two different things. The Satanic Church is like, Hail Satan, we believe in Satan, from like the 70s or whatever. And the Satanic Temple is more just a political group that's really into keeping the state and church separated. But it's very, very interesting. The way that it was shot was very cool. The story is very captivating. And it's like, I would love people that are really, really one way to try to watch this movie, because it's very hard to pick them apart. You know what I mean? It's like one of those things where they handle things with such class that it's just like, you can't really say they're wrong for anything they do. Maybe some things, but for the most part, like, they're not wrong for anything they do. So I would check it out. Hail Satan with a question mark.
All right. Well, that was Necronomicon, the Book of the Dead. We were joined by Cyborg Joe of the Lethal Weapons. Thank you so much, Joe. Join us next week, guys, for another anthology film, continuing our October of anthology films. This one picked by Brian, who... It's a real laugh that he's talking about how boring Necronomicon is with the bullshit that he's making us watch next week.
So never saw it, so I may regret it.
Strap in, tune in for that, and make sure that you check us out on all of our social media, HMN Podcast on all platforms, and HMNpodcast.com.
Yeah. You're listening to the Geekscape Network. You're listening to the Geekscape Network.